the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, I have Jason Bond in the studio with me, and we've got a very special guest caller today. I think he said he's calling in from the truck. Isn't that what he said, Jason?
He is in the truck on the way home on a Friday afternoon.
Well, in the truck on the way home, we have, what's your official title, Michael?
Director of the Bureau of Plant Industry.
So if y'all didn't catch that voice, this is Michael Ledlow, who is the director of the Bureau of Plant Industries, joining in with us today. So how you doing on a Friday afternoon driving home from Jackson?
I'm doing awesome. Bluebird pretty day, and I'm headed to Yazoo County.
So that's good. That's the home range for you, right?
Yes, sir.
So, Michael, how long have you been the director of the Bureau of Plant Industries? I always want to say plant board, and I know that's not quite right, but that's the term that's used out in the world most often.
It used to be the state plant board, but we became the Bureau of Plant Industry. We were a standalone state agency, and then we were brought in under the Department of Agriculture, I believe, under Jim Butt Ross, and we just became a bureau of the Department of Agriculture.
How long have you been the director?
14 months.
14 months, so still relatively new in that role, but you're by no means new to the Bureau, that's correct, huh?
No, I started March 1st, 1989, so here in just a couple of months, I'll have 30 years in. I spent the first 26 and a half in the field as a district entomologist, and then about a year and a half, I was appointed state entomologist and then appointed to director, which I actually hold both titles, state entomologist and director.
So, Michael, are you the longest tenured Bureau Industries guy in the building with you?
Well, if you put it that way, yes, I am. I'm the longest serving male. Tixie Little started in 87, so she got a two-year head start on me. She's an admin at the office.
So you've seen the Bureau from all sides of it. You started at the bottom and now sit in the top chair. I think you've seen a lot of different things through that time. So, being a field guy, how many field guys do y'all have out there right now?
We have 17 full-time employees, although one of those 17 is dedicated to sweet potato and peanut and some other special projects. 16 are what we classify as district entomologists.
So, Mike, why are they called district entomologists?
Well, again, it goes back to our roots. Being the state plant board, it was handling all the plant regulations and plant pests for the state.
Okay.
I believe it was around 1910, 1911 is when we were chartered by the Plant Act, which was the law that created us and create regulations to enforce those laws.
So that term entomologist, that goes way back. So when that was put into the rules, we didn't have necessarily any inorganic pesticides, whether it be insecticides or herbicides.
Yeah, we're talking pre-World War One, so we're over 100 years old.
Okay, so that makes a lot more sense then.
If you've been to Harned Hall on the campus, Mississippi State, Dr. Harned was our first director.
Give us a good story from your time working in the field, something that was kind of quirky, maybe outside the normal of what folks would expect.
I've seen all kinds of things. I've seen farmers wanting to fight on turn rows. I've seen people pull guns on each other. All kinds of uncomfortable situations. Working in the field, you know, is a lot of freedom, and you get to meet so many different people and get to see so many different things. Having a little farm background actually helped me. And when I started, most people did have an ag background. Today, some of our people may have ag degrees, but they're not coming off a farm.
Well, we'll talk about that difference a little bit, Michael. Talk about, you know, having grown up in the system and seeing how we've changed from, like you said, almost 30 years ago, where a lot more people were connected to the farm, to today, where we have a huge disconnect, I feel like, from the farm. In the role of your organization has had to have change over time, correct?
Well, the Bureau of Plant Industry is made up of four divisions. The pesticide division, the plant division, seed lab, seed, fertilizer, lime, and soil plant amendment. and that's a division unto itself. So we touch people in a lot of different ways. I mean, most time when people think of the plant board, they're thinking about drift complaints in the Mississippi Delta. But, of course, you know, we work termite complaints. We regulate anyone who applies a pesticide to the state of Mississippi. We like it. They do it for a fee.
Right. In the lady that's putting Miracle-Gro on her roses in her garden, y'all make sure that Miracle-Gro has the appropriate nutrients that's making the label claims, correct?
That is correct. A lot of what we do is consumer protection. We're sampling, again, fertilizers, seeds, lime, soil and plant amendments, pesticides, and adjuvants. So if that label says it's a triple 13, it can only have 10% variant.
So how does that work, Michael? Is that a routine, just in the case of a fertilizer, is that a routine sampling that y'all do, or does a manufacturer send samples to make sure it meets the specifications for Mississippi?
No, 99% are routine samples. Every once in a while we'll receive a complaint and take a sample, but it's our inspectors out in the field, in the marketplace, collecting samples from where the consumers purchase the sample.
So they're going to just say a retail outlet and requesting to pull samples of their product?
Correct. And the same thing for everything we do,
yeah,
including seed. I mean, we're going to the retail outlets, collecting samples, and just making sure the consumer is receiving what they're paying for.
What about the other divisions? You know, I've heard you talk about some stuff that's kind of unrelated to what we do in row crop agriculture.
Well, we can talk about the plant division, which, and also the sweet potato program and the apiary program falls under the plant division. But, you know, we go to wholesale and retail nurseries and nursery outlets and do inspections, to number one, to make sure there's no invasive pests present or that they're selling invasive plants such as kogon grass, which is sometimes called Japanese blood grass. We also are involved heavily from the plant side in commerce. A lot of people don't realize we have an irradiation facility at Gulfport that a lot of things flow through there that would not otherwise be coming to this nation because they can't pass phytosanitary quarantine. Say a strawberry, you can't fumigate strawberries, but you know you can run them through this irradiation facility and they'll be free of any type of pest, disease, or anything else, and it doesn't harm the strawberry. It actually will give it a longer shelf life.
So the work y'all do at the port allows us to get commerce in where a lot of other states that may not have that type of facility does not.
We have the only one in the southeast, I believe, in Mississippi. So we're constantly doing phytosanitary certificates for things coming in and out like that.
Well, that's awesome. See, I didn't even know that.
I didn't either. Yeah, I knew they did things outside of our little small world of row crop agriculture, but I definitely didn't know about that.
You know, here's an example that I did when I was actually in the field where I was inspecting mats, a sawmill was taking gum trees, cutting them in and making mats, like lay down on muddy areas to walk equipment across. And these were being shipped to Maine. So we have to do a state-to-state phyto inspection. So I had to go and look at all those to make sure there was bark present on those. So, you know, you inspect all of them, make sure there's no bark present so we can ship those mats from Yazoo City, Mississippi to Maine.
Yeah, Michael, and I think, you know, not a lot of our listeners understand about how crossing state lines with ag products or any type of biological product, there are rules and regulations in place because, you know, much of our listening audience probably never had to stop across the Mississippi River and check for boll weevils.
Michael, you mentioned the invasive species and obviously being in weed science, I'm interested in that. What if, just say in the case of kogon grass, you know, say some kogon grass gets to North Mississippi, so just keep it inside the state. Who would y'all pass? Do y'all pass that off on someone else to ensure that that's contained, or are you responsible for the containment as well?
We're allowed through regulation to notify someone if they have an invasive species on their property through public notice, and that they have to destroy it. And if they don't destroy it, the state can come in. I haven't seen that used. I've been here, like I say, almost 30 years, and we've never done that I've known of. We have actually a kogon grass program where we're supplying product to up to 5 acres to private landowners to clear up these infestations on their own property at really no cost to them. They just have to provide their own labor.
So most of the time people are cooperative on things like that.
We can give away every gallon we can get. We just don't have enough funding to really keep it going.
So Michael, in your time and talking about these invasive species, what is, you think, the number one, I guess in your time there, invasive species that's been hardest to tackle inside the state?
Well, we'll go right back to cogon grass. It's very prevalent in the southern part of the state, and it's moving all the way up north. State Forest Commission is doing a wonderful job of trying to start from the north and work its way south, treating it to try to eradicate it. It'll choke out a pine tree, seedling pines, it's devastating to our, not only our native species of plants, but also of animals. You take South Mississippi, we have the endangered gopher tortoise. Well, it takes habitat away from them. They can't, the plant is so thick, they can't travel through it.
And is that its main problem, is just the density and the size of that grass plant?
It's just so dense, nothing else can grow in it. And it's you're the PhD, but it's allelopathic, I believe.
Okay. So it gives off a chemical that hurts plants growing around it.
So it's like a super Italian ryegrass.
Kind of, yeah.
So it's been a real challenge, and people will mow it when it's blooming, and then they'll just carry the seed other places and deposit it. And, of course, the seed will be windborne and can move that way.
So kind of where's the line at right now? You said it's moving north into the state. Where is it?
Oh, it's well north of Starkville in patches. The bulk of it, of course, is in South Mississippi.
When you see, like in the median on a four-lane highway, sometimes you'll see an area that looks like it's been just carpet-bombed. Would that be an example of where just in this case, cogon grass has been treated?
Like going down Highway 45, if you're going to go all the way, try to go to Mobile, you'll see lots of those patches further south you get. And they're treating cogon grass, and the highway department's done a tremendous job to try to stop the spread of cogon grass on their right-of-ways.
So I assume they got guys just out kind of scouting for it?
Yes, and they'll find it, or our guys might see it and notify them. And most of the time, they know where it's at. The highway department will know where it's at. They'll try to treat it.
All right, Michael, so you mentioned APHRI a while ago. I'm not sure I understand what that is. Could you give us a rundown of that program?
Well, the APHRI Industries are our beekeepers in the state. We have a lot of hobbyist beekeepers, but also we have a good many professional beekeepers that keep bees for a living, whether it be for honey production or for moving bees out of state, state of California, to pollinate almonds. We inspect bees every year in January going to California. But we also, we have people that sell nukes and queens, think starter kits for someone who wants to become a beekeeper. And we inspect those to be shipped out of state, looking for things like American foul brood, European foul brood, rural mite, things of that nature.
So your reach really goes outside of the state of Mississippi by ensuring our products leaving the state are good sanitary designated products.
Yes.
Michael, back in the area of row crop agriculture, and Bobby always hates it when I call rice row crop, but it falls into that category. Talk about a couple years ago when we had a new regulation for glyphosate applications in Bolivar County. I thought that was a real success story on something that addressed a very specific problem, and the success of it I think has been very tangible in the last 2 years.
Well, it's been received well by most rice farmers.
Let me go in first and say exactly how the Bureau functions.
Okay.
We have an advisory board, and that board is made up of 11 members. They create all the regulations that we have. They approve it, yes or no. The commissioner does not do that. A lot of people think the commissioner does, or I do as the director. We don't create the regulations. Our advisory board does. And so we're governed by the people we regulate. So we're very stakeholder involved. So when those farmers in Bolivar County came to us and said, we would like a regulation in Bolivar County, which started a series of meetings. And we're there really to give them what they want. They wanted this regulation for glyphosate by air in Bolivar County. We've got with farmers, consultants, we're in the room, aerial applicators, and we all sat down and compromised to a regulation that would work. And that regulation was proposed to our board along with the stakeholders' letters of support, and our board approved that regulation. It's actually going to expire December 31 of 18, but we're having another board meeting on the 15th of November, and it's on the agenda to re-up it because we received letters from those individuals that they want to continue that regulation. So we're going to re-up it without a sunset this time. That way, if they decide they don't want that regulation, all they have to do is come to us and tell us. We have a board meeting, and we present to the board that this group that requested this regulation now would like it to be nullified, and then the board would vote on that.
And I think that, again, I think that was very successful in the 2 years that that's been in place. There's been some things change around the periphery of that, but I think it's definitely had a direct effect on the amount of rice injured with glyphosate. And my recollection from, you mentioned us being at those meetings, and we were. My recollection from those meetings was that everyone was very willing to not compromise, but they were very willing to work together and reach compromise is the right word, to reach an agreement that was beneficial for everybody.
No, compromise is exactly the right word because, you know, sitting in there, let's make it clear, not everybody got what they were asking for, but everybody got what they could live with.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to describe it, Bobby.
And seem to be happy with.
Yeah, definitely seem to be happy with. I was quite shocked that, you know, that first year it went into place. We had a little bit of arguing here and there, but as we've moved down the road from it, I think it's only been looked at as a good thing by most.
And Mike, a question that I get occasionally on certified pesticide applicators. I think a lot of times people assume that we work for the state and then Department of Ag employees work for the state, so we're all kind of in the same pool, and that's not necessarily the case. So explain to the listeners how the pesticide applicator training is handled.
Well, for either private or commercial training, you know, extension is education, and the Bureau of Plant Industry is enforcement. So extension, of course, does the education, and then they'll give us the information, we issue those cards, and then, you know, we're really looking at it again from an enforcement standpoint. You know, if one of those private or commercial certified applicators is involved in something that's a violation, then we step in, take an action against that individual person.
All right, so Michael, you talked about the certified applicators, and you know, you talked a little bit about going out and maybe having to impart a fine. Well, that would constitute that certified applicator done something wrong, and most of the time when we think someone does something wrong, it's generally an off-target herbicide movement. So if you could, we hadn't touched on it, and we'll try to wrap up this conversation with that, by what is the Bureau's role in defining that type of issue?
Well, our role in it is strictly to see, has a violation occurred, either of a state regulation, federal regulation, or of the label. So our role, you know, so many times people call us, I want you to document this. Well, that's not what we do. We're strictly there to see if, like I say, a violation has occurred, document it, and take an appropriate action against the perpetrator of that. We don't get into estimating loss, or we can't tell someone if something's safe to eat or anything like that. We don't measure area damaged or things like that. So we're strictly looking at it from an enforcement standpoint and not, you know, am I going to be able to make a crop, or, again, can I eat this, or that type situation.
So you're not bringing the science to say, yes, this is a safe product. You're not coming out there adjusting the crop maybe for insurance. Your role in this is you're basically the cops.
Correct. I mean, we're not giving agronomic advice on what do you need? Do you need to plow this crop up and start over? Do you need to maybe fertilize it more, water it more, you know, so forth, so on. We're strictly there to try to determine if a violation occurred.
And that's where we come in. You know, we it's not uncommon at all for us to see the plant board folks out in, I'm sorry, the Bureau of Plant Industry folks out in the field. And, you know, we're doing two very different things. And, you know, we try to help the grower, you know, make crop management decisions. But so, Michael, just in a case where there is a violation that you can prove, you know, how does that process proceed from there?
Well, if we determine an applicator has committed a violation, we'll send that applicator a formal complaint letter. And it has the entire file with it so he can see the evidence we have. It's kind of like disclosure and what we're alleging that he did. And he has two options at that point. He can write a response or he can call us and ask for an informal hearing where we sit down together and talk about it. You know, a lot of times a farmer will have some more information that we didn't have access to. So I really like the informal hearing process. It's a lot better because people tend to communicate better talking than they do writing.
Sure.
And then we'll take that all that information into consideration, and if we still deem that a penalty is necessary, we'll send them another letter assessing the penalty. At that point, he has the option to ask for a formal hearing. A formal hearing will go before our board in a courtroom-type setting, and he'll present his case. Hopefully, he will hire an attorney to present his case because he will have an attorney that's assigned to us from the Attorney General's office representing us. It is, I mean, it's you're in a courtroom, but just our board members are the judge.
And how many board members are there?
11 total.
So you got a good tiebreaker in there.
Yeah, like the Supreme Court.
So they'll go before our board, and if they still disagree with the board, they can take it up to, I forget if it's circuit or chancery, I think it's circuit court, and appeal it to that, the circuit court. I believe it is still the regulation or the law specifies it has to be in Hinds County.
Well, man, we sure appreciate you taking time out of your Friday afternoon, Michael, and while you were driving to boot. So have a good weekend, and to our listeners, you know, always, if we can do anything for you, just give us a call.
Thank you. Take care.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.